I have to still use this computer. I don't have the access to the other one now, so we just have to hope for the best of us, all right?
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we can see. Okay, we're ready to start.
It's recording.
First of all, welcome back to everybody after Yom Tov. So we're going to try to continue along the lines of some of the things that we've spent some time in the past of analyzing shilas, particular shilas that come up, hopefully interesting, some of them are fascinating shilas. But I thought tonight, rather than talking about a particular shilas in hand, I want to speak about something that relates almost to Pesach Halacha in general, a certain fact that a Rav has to take into consideration very often, and something that definitely has been on the minds of many, many Rabbanim over the last several months, and that's the situation what's called the Halacha Shas Adchak. We have found ourselves, and almost become almost like the lingo of Rabbanim even. It's a bad thing to say, but it's almost taken on the phrase called the Corona Kula. There are certain kulas and certain shittas and certain psakim that are offered, which under normal circumstances, perhaps we wouldn't be following. And yet there is such an institution Allah calls a Shas Adchak. Now, unfortunately, sometimes people misunderstand Shas Adchak. Shas Adchak does not mean because it's extenuating circumstances, therefore things that are also become mutter. That's not exactly how halacha works. What Shas Adchak means is that certain halachic opinions that we maybe wouldn't follow under normal circumstances, if we had options to avoid relying on certain leniencies, we will accept otherwise acceptable halachic opinions, but not necessarily what would be preferred halachic opinions. That's sort of the principle of tonight's shiur, is the notion of somchin al das yochid b'shas adchak. We know as a starting point in halacha, we try to follow what's called the majority, acharav mahatos. It's a very real principle. We're going to explore that as principle a little bit more as we develop the shiur tonight. But there is definitely a principle in halacha that sometimes we're permitted to, in a sense, ignore the majority and follow a minority view if it constitutes a halachic shas adchak. So let's see the background of this in the Gemara and in the poskim and see how this begins to set the stage for many, many of the piskei halacha that are offered, particularly this time of extenuating circumstances. So the Gemara begins, actually, the sugi begins with the first of the Marim Kamos. It's the Mishnah and Maseches Nid and Dav Zayin and Mebeis. The Mishnah is talking about very, very technical, detailed intricacy related to Hilchas Nida. It is basically irrelevant to Hilchas Nida Bizman Hazeh for the following reason. It is something that speaks really in the realm of Tumah V'Tahara. We know that Hilchas Nida is broken down into two categories. There's Hilchas Nida as relates to a husband and wife, and there's Hilchas Nida as relates to purity and impurity, about whether the Truma can be eaten, whether the Kochim can be eaten, whether the woman can go to the Beis HaMikdash, bring Kavanos, etc. So the Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara part of Hilchas Nida basically is not relevant for us. We live at a time of Churban. Of course, the part of Hilchas Nida that is relevant is the Isser Labayla. Just parenthetically, in the Sefer Kuzari, there's a fascinating discussion that takes place about this phenomena, how that we don't observe Tumah V'Tahara anymore, but we still do observe the Isser of Nida Labayla. The way the Sefer Kuzari is written, that the Melech HaKuzarim, the king of the Kuzarim, was looking to find the truth in religion. So he speaks to a representative of the three religions of the world, one of course being Yahadus, and the Sefer Kuzari makes the point that the representative, the Rav, Chacham, the representative of Torah in the Sefer Kuzari, highlights the fact that of all the other world religions, so Yahadus is a religion that believes that the Torah has never changed, that Kadosh Baruch Hu's word has never changed, unlike other religions who concede that at one time, quote unquote, Judaism was authentic, but now it has been superseded by other supposed prophets, etc. So that's a fundamental difference, obviously, between Yadus, that we believe in Kadosh Baruch Hu, lo yamer dasel, the olam zilas, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, never changes. So the Melech HaKuzar imposes the question to the Chacham, Im Kain, that the Torah never changes, how come you don't observe the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara today? So the Kuzarim, that's not a change in halacha. The Torah says that the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara only apply when there's a Beis HaMikdash, when the Kabbalahs, when there's Truma, when the Master Sheni, etc. And we don't need those things today. We don't have those things today. So therefore, it's not that the halacha changes, this the reality has changed. So the Melech HaKuzarim turns around and asks the Chacham Im Kain, why do you observe Tevila B'mikvah V'Tahara Mishpacha? Why do you observe Yuchas Nida for? That's also Tumah V'Tahara. To which the Chacham responded, no, it's not. That's not Tumah V'Tahara. That's just the Heter. The halachas of Nida L'Bayil have never changed. The halachas of Tumah V'Tahara have not changed. It's just the reality is that they don't apply because there's no Beis HaMikdash. But there's a very significant portion of Maseches Nida, including the sugya about the Burger Bun, that really is part of the sugyas of Tumah V'Tahara, not so much Nida L'Baila. So the Mishnah of Dav Zayin is really a continuation of the Mishnah back in the Beis. Chazal made the following takona. Chazal said that when a woman gets a period, she begins to bleed. So Mina Torah, she's really only Temeya and Asura from that point onwards. If she notices the beginning of her Iyaz Dam at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, so there's no reason to assume that anything that she touched earlier in the day is Tomei. From that point on, she had what's called the Chazoka Mekor. She had the status quo, she was Tahora. She remains Tahora until proven otherwise. That's the Din Mina Torah. Nevertheless, Chazal made a gezerah that since there's a possibility that she may have started actually bleed a little bit earlier than actually noticed, the Gemara goes through some of the anatomy involved in that. So therefore, the Gemara says, Chazal made a gezerah that for the last 24 hours, from the ace to the ace, anything that she touched has to be assumed that it's tamei. That chumrah was only made for kachim. It wasn't made even for low-level taharos, and it's completely irrelevant in terms of nidah labayla. But in the realm of kachim, they made a special chumrah midirabanan called tumas niyes liyes. So come to Tanoim and say that there are a few women who are not subject to this gezerah, women who are very unlikely to be bleeding. So some of those women include women who are pregnant, who are nursing, etc. And Rabbi Eliezer has the following chiddush. Rabbi Eliezer, in the first of the Mamakamis, kol isha she'ovra leh sholosh oynes dayashayta. Any woman who has already passed three cycles and has not bled. Now, that could be indicative of the fact that maybe she's getting older, maybe she's already reaching the end of her cycles, or maybe there's some other reason why she's not getting a period. So we don't really know. But for three cycles, a period of 90 days have already passed, and she hasn't had any Riyaz Dam, therefore it's very unlikely that she has Riyaz Dam. And if she begins to see at a certain point, we don't have to be concerned that anything happened before. And it's very unlikely anything happened beforehand. And therefore, we can apply the din of Dayashite, and there's no need to institute this Chumah Midirabon. That was the breakthrough of Rabbi Eliezer. So it happens to be that nobody else agreed to Rabbi Eliezer. Nobody else said that just the mere fact that she hasn't bled for 3 months is a proof of anything. If she's pregnant, she's nursing, there are reasons, you know, biological reasons to say with certainty that she's not getting a period now, then we don't have to institute this din Midirabon. But the fact that she just merely has missed 3 months, so she missed 3 months, now she'll start again after 3 months. So Rabbi Eliezer was the lone view in this matter. So Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara in the second of the Mamakamis tells the following story. And needed of Tesla base. Tana Rabbanan, Maiseva also Rabbi Ki Rabbi Eliezer. One time it happened that such a shaila came up and Rabbi Danasi paskid like Rabbi Eliezer. Now, even though Rabbi Danasi lived well after the Churban, the Gemara explains that in his day, there were still people observing the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara vis-a-vis Truma. They actually still had Eifa Paraduma left over from before the Churban. So some of the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara was still being observed. So in the days of Rabbi Danasi, he paskid the shayla following Rabbi Eliezer. Liachashir Nisker, after he remembered that he apparently had paskid incorrectly, because Rabbi Eliezer should not be followed, he was a Das Yochid. Amar, he said, Kedai Rabbi Eliezer smoch alav b'shasad chak. Well, we could rely on Rabbi Eliezer because it was a shasad chak. What was the shasad chak? So Rashi explains that it was a time when there wasn't that much food around, it was a time of a drought or famine. And therefore, if you're going to declare that all the food that was touched by this woman in the last 24 hours is tomei, that's going to minimize the amount of food that's going to be edible. So the truma is going to have to be discarded. And that would be a big, big shasad chak. So therefore, when Rebbe realized that he had paskid like Rabbi Eliezer, although maybe he shouldn't have done it in the first place, he says, no, it's okay. We're allowed to rely on Rabbi Eliezer because it's a shasad chak. So what does that mean? So what exactly did Rebbe remember? Did he remember that there was a formal psak halacha against Rabbi Eliezer? It means Rabbi Eliezer had officially been taken into a vote, and the Beis Din HaGadol in the previous generation had outvoted Rabbi Eliezer. So once a shita has been rejected in psak halacha, it was nimna v'gavur, you cannot rely on it. So this is an important principle in halacha. Not even a person as great as Rabbi Eliezer even constitutes a das yochid to reckon with, even b'shasad chak. If a particular opinion was completely rejected in the world of psak halacha, then it cannot be resurrected, even b'shasad chak. Ella, what happened in this story? The lo itba hilchus lo kemar velo kemar. What happened was there was never really a clear cut psak against Rabbi Eliezer. It was always assumed not like Rabbi Eliezer. Umali Achash Nisker, what did Rabbi Yehuda Nasi remember? The Achash Nisker, the love Yochid Poligale, El Rabban Poligale. Once he remembered that Rabbi Eliezer was an individual and he was outvoted, not literally outvoted in terms of a formal vote, but Lamaisa, he was the individual. Amar then and only then, Kedai Rabbi Eliezer Smochel B'Shasachak. Then it's okay to rely on Rabbi Eliezer B'Shasachak. So there are two very, very important principles in Psak Halacha that emanate from these couple of lines in the Gemara. Again, this particular sugya is not relevant Lamaisa because we don't have Dayashaita, we don't have the Tekanes Chum of Meis Lies, we don't have Truma, we have Taras today, but the principles are far-reaching that emanate from this sugya. Principle number one is that even in the greatest Shasachak, not every opinion can necessarily carry any weight in Halacha, particularly if the Shita was rejected outright. Number two, if the Shita was not rejected outright, then it can be relied upon if it constitutes a shasat chak. So how far-reaching is this principle? How much can you rely on a das yochid in a situation of a shasat chak? Again, assuming that shita was never completely and totally rejected. So there's an important comment of the Taz, in the third of the Mamakomos. The Taz is one of the main Nosekelim on the side of Shulchan Aruch, both in Aruch Chaim and Yeridei, and then in a little bit of Chashim Mishpat as well. And the Taz in Yeridei and Simin Reis Tzadik Gimel is commenting upon one of the strange phenomena in Halacha. One of the strangest applications of Halacha has been and continues to be to this very day is the practical application of the Halacha's governing Chadash and Yashan. Just to give a very quick background, only to appreciate where the Taz is coming from. The Torah tells us in Parshas Emor that one is not permitted to eat any new grain products meaning anything from the five species of grain, including wheat, barley, spelt, oat, and rye, that's usually what we assume the five grains are. Anything that comes from these five grains is not permitted to be eaten until the Korban HaOmer is brought. So that means anything that is harvested any time in the season before the Korban HaOmer has to wait until the Korban HaOmer is brought, or in the absence of a Beis HaMikdash, one has to wait until the day that the Korban HaOmer would be brought. Machlekes in the Gemara, whether it's the beginning of the day or the end of the day, very small technical detail of a few hours, but basically you have to wait until the second day of Pesach, the beginning of the day or the end of the day, in order for all the new grain to be permissible. Any grain that was harvested, that grew from 5 years ago, that was automatically mutter, and now that remains mutter li'olam vod. But any new grain remains a problem until the Korban HaOmer or the equivalent is brought. There was a big machlekes hatanoim as to whether this is limited only to Eretz Yisrael or not. The Torah mentions the phrase b'chomosh roseichem, which seems to lead us to believe that it applies even in Chutz Laretz. That's what many tanoim were of the opinion. Other tanoim said no, it's limited to Eretz Yisrael. B'chomosh roseichem means that it doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael until you actually conquer it and have Eretz Yisrael. So for the first 14 years that they were in the process of making into Eretz Moshul Seichem, the halachas of Chadash and Yashin did not apply. So there's a machlekes atanoim and a somewhat unresolved machlekes. However, if one looks in the classic Rishonim, who we usually turn for Psak Halacha, so following the model of the Beis Yosef tells us that the three pillars of Psak Halacha that we turn to are the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. And the Beis Yosef said, whichever is the majority, that's how we're going to paskin. That's why, in fact, the Shulchan Aruch is always tilted a little bit in the Psak, in the direction of the Sfardim, because the Rif and the Rambam are both Sfardim, so that by definition, that's going to carry more weight. The Ramah, to offset that weight, brought back the Rosh and the Baal Yataisus and the Mordechai and the Murtaberg, the great Chachmei Ashkenaz Poskim. That's why the Ramah gives us almost the counterbalances that, in terms of the Rif and the Rambam versus the Rosh, but the basic pillars of Psak Halacha are pretty much the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. In this particular area of Halacha, of Chadash and Yashan, all three of them agree that the prohibition in HaTorah of Chadash, of eating new grain, applies in full force in Chutz La'aretz as well as in Eretz Yisrael. So, therefore, the Shulchan Aruch unequivocally paskins that Chadash applies, and it's an issur in HaTorah to eat new grain before the Korban HaOmer is brought. In an ongoing discussion for the last 2,000 years, it continues to be a raging issue today, practically. So there are really two different issues going on. There's one issue of practically what grain, if any, on any given market is actually Chadash, and how much grain can we assume is really just last year's surplus grain? So that was an issue that the Ramad discusses in the small little shtetl marketplace in Krakow. And that's something that has to be discussed in the multi-billion dollar marketplaces of the granaries of America as well. So that's not the topic of today's year. It's a fascinating topic, but that's not really what we're going to talk about now. We're going to talk about the other part of the equation. Namely, even assuming that we do have a metzias concern here, that some of the grain that's sitting on our table may very well be halachli chadash, the question is, do we have to be concerned? Because after all, it did grow in Chutz Laretz. So what is the halacha? So as I mentioned before, most of the Rishonim, at least the Gedolei HaRishonim, of that normally are the pillars in Psak Halacha, side unequivocally with the Machmirim, that you have to be concerned with Chadosh in Chutz Laretz Bina Torah. But there were some who disagreed. There were some Rishonim, some very great Rishonim, Rabbeinu Baruch and Rezarua, some primarily more Ashkenazi Rishonim, who paskid LaHalacha LaKula on the Shaila. So now comes the Taz and says, well, what do we do with this information? How do we... We're sitting in Poland in the 1600s, 1600s, trying to figure out what should we do with this. So comes the Taz with the following suggestion, the third of the Mamakovas. V'im kein, yesh planu ladun v'loimar. V'bindinos elu shu shasar chak. In our countries, there is a tremendous shasar chak. The chayev, it's interesting what the shasar chak was. The chayev shel adam tole b'shtia sheikha sa'orim. He says, the only drink that we have is beer. And the beer is coming from barley. And barley was always traditionally a potential problem in terms of metzias in Europe. V'shibon shua and oats was a problem. Wheat, depending on the wheat season, and the harvest season, planting season, may or may not have been as much of a problem. It's interesting because that is still the scenario today, that in terms of just the metzias, so the prevalence of chadash in the grain market is even more potentially in oats than it is in wheat. I didn't say it doesn't exist in wheat at all. It does exist in wheat also. But again, based on the different planting seasons in America, things are a little bit different. But again, that's not the part we want to focus on right now. So comes the Taz and says, we're in a big shasar chak. We have nothing to eat and nothing to drink. So what do? Kedayu atanakama l'smeichala b'shasar chak. We can follow the opinion, which happens to be the Tanakam and the Mishnah, that chadash doesn't apply in Chutz Laretz, because this is a huge shasar chak. Since the Gemara never paskid explicitly, like Rabbi Eliezer was the descending view. So even though the Rift, the Rabbi, the Rosh did paskin that way, the Taz says it's not a clear cut psak. It's not like the Gemara says, Hilchasa, that Chadash is also in Chutz Laretz. It was still a running machlokes in the days of the Tanaim and the Amoraim. And therefore, says the Taz, we have a right to apply the principle of Kedai hu pleini l'smeicha l'bishasar chak, even though that plenty may very, very well have been a das yachid. And he says, V'raya brulaz says the Taz, let me bring you a proof that you can rely on yachid and b'shasar chak. And he quotes the entire Gemara that we mentioned before. So if you take a look at the second to last line of Elefaneinu, the chol she'ein alacha psuka, elashiyesh loymad lakarabim, osa shasar chak v'dachin v'osad rabim. Says the Taz, as long as there was no clear-cut psak, which in the days of Chazal, days of the Gemara, clearly there was not. Therefore, even though the overall majority of halachic opinion seems to be the chumrah, we could label this as a shasar chak. Now, again, I don't want to focus on if this is the approach of the matirim of chadash, whether that shasar chak actually exists in America today. The Taz's description of life in 1500s in Poland is probably not the same as Tinek in Tovshin Pe'alev. One could do very, very well. Again, I'm not advocating. I'm not suggesting. I'm saying that the observance of the sugyas of Yoshim today is by far not a shasar chak. It may have been a shasar chak 30 years ago. In today's world, it is definitely not a shasar chak. There are very, very easy for a person to practically observe the din of Yoshim today. I'm not saying a person has to, but it's definitely not the level of shasar chak as the Taz was described. I'm sorry. Somebody had a question? I thought someone was asking a question. Sorry. So again, we're much more interested rather than the intricacies of Chadash right now is the application of that Gemara Maseches Nida to an area of Halacha of Chadash.
Join the meeting.
What is fascinating and controversial about the Taz is that the Taz made a tremendous jump. And it's this jump that actually the Shach takes issue with the Taz on. The Shach, I had put it on the Ramakomas, but I guess it didn't make it into the Bar Ilan. It's the Nekudas HaKesef. It's not the classic Shach. It's the notes that the Shach writes on the side of the Taz. The problem was that the Taz and Shach were contemporaries. The Taz was much older than the Shach, but they lived at the same time. And they wrote, the Taz wrote his Sefer and the Shach wrote his Sefer. The Shach didn't know about the Taz's Sefer. So after the Taz's Sefer was published, the Shach saw many points in the Taz that he wanted to argue with, but he had already published a Sefer. So he published a second, not a full Sefer, but simply notes on the Taz. And he called those notes the Nekudas HaKesef. The reason why he called them the Nekudas HaKesef is based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Terei Zahav Nasalach in Nekudas HaKesef. Of course, Torah Zav was with a tough and Torah Zav was with a test, but you know, who's looking at the dictic and the spelling right now? So, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, somebody had a question. Yeah. Yeah.
Once we rely on the Yahid in Shat Ad-Hak, based on the two principles the rabbi said, is that going to continue for the next year and the next year, or just one time? And that's
no, I think the Shas al Chak is only when the Shas al Chak exists. That's what I'm suggesting, that just as Rabbi Danasi only relied on Rabbi Eliezer when there was a famine, so one would have to really look and see, is this a equivalent Shas al Chak in terms of Chadash and Yashan that the Taz was describing? I don't think that the facts are correct today. So, I think that if one's living in a pretty standard Jewish community in today's world. So definitely in our size of a community, if you just simply go to any from store and take a look, and you'll see that 3/4 of the grain fruits say on them Yashan. So and the ones that don't, they're usually very easy to ascertain. So again, I'm not suggesting, I'm not advocating, I'm not selling the Yashan point. I'm just saying that the degree of Shasal Chak that the Taz was describing probably is not present today, and therefore if this was the reason to be making, we would probably have to reassess that reason.
So since we have that halakha, b'sha'at ad-hak, is every time there is a sha'at ad-hak, we can use it?
Again, it would have to be assessed. The Rav would have, you know, Posik would have to assess, is it a valid sha'at ad-hak, and is that shita viable shita? So the real issue that I want to take up with the Taz is the question that the Shach raises. Namely, the original source for this idea following a Yochid B'Shas Al-Chak is found by an area of halacha that's only Midrabanon. That whole discussion, Huchas Nida, Meseches Nida, about Dayan Shaitan and Me'es Lies, was the Chumah Midrabanon. Midaraisa, you never have to declare anything to be Tameh retroactively. So says the Shach against the Taz, just because you could rely on a Das Yochid B'Shas Al-Chak vis-a-vis Dirim Midrabanon, who says you have a right to do that vis-a-vis Dirim Deraisa? And there's a tremendous difference between the two, says the Shaf. When it comes to Dirim Derabanan, the Chachamim make the rules. Heim Amru Veim Amru. The Chachamim said, you have to observe this Dirim Derabanan. And then very often the Chachamim lifted it and said, if it's a Mocham Hefsid, sometimes it's a monetary law, sometimes they lifted Isum Derabanan, sometimes they lifted Isum Derabanan, but Mocham Choli, a person is ill, even though not necessarily deathly ill. Kohen V'Kohena, very, very often, Chazal lifted certain Isurim Drabbanon under extenuating circumstances. So says the Shach, it's not surprising that vis-a-vis Dinim Drabbanon, Chazal said, Kedai L'Sachal, Chazal say whatever they want. They may be Issa, so they can put in any leniency they want. When it comes to Dinim Deraisa, we're not at liberty to just to play with Dinim Deraisa. Says the Shach, the fact that we follow a row, we follow a majority, that is a Dinim HaTorah. That's part of the Parsha of Chumash of Acharam Lahatas. So if there's a din min haTorah that is, in a sense, forcing us to follow the majority, how can we turn around and say, well, it's a Shas al-Chak? Shas al-Chak doesn't give us the liberty to eat reif. Shas al-Chak doesn't give us the liberty to be Mechal Shabbos. If the Torah law dictates that you have to follow the majority, then the game's over. So then the Das Yochid doesn't exist min haTorah. What happened to Acharam Lahatas? Therefore, the Shach argues with the Taz and says, applying Shas al-Chak to any other case short of a din derabbanan would not be acceptable. How would the Taz respond to the Shach's critique? So l'chora, the Taz would have to say as follows. That rule of Acharam Lahatos applies in the setting of a Beis Din. If you have a formal question that comes to Beis Din, you go to a Beis Din, and you take a poll, and the Beis take a vote, and the Beis Din paskets Asa Muta, Tomei Tor, Chaya, whatever the case may be, but it's what's called Omnu Dominion. So that's the Parsha of Acharam Lahatos. The fact that we follow Rov Chachamim in any given question, when there was no official formal vote on the matter, there was never a direct debate with an actual conclusion to the debate, that's not really Acharav Lahatos. And most of Halacha is like that, except for those cases that were under dominion. That's exactly what the Gemara Nida says. In fact, not allowed to follow the Yochid B'Shas HaChach, even by Dinim D'Rabbanan. So the Taz Lechora would respond back to the Shach and say, you can't ask me a question, isn't it Achorav Mahatos? No, it's not. Achorav Mahatos doesn't apply unless there was a formal debate with a formal conclusion with a formal Amda L'Minyan. So when all the dust settles, we have an important machlek is the Taz and the Shach. What are the parameters of the statement? So there are many, many things we have to ascertain before we can apply this principle of halacha. You have to first of all assess, is it really a shasar chak? That's a very, very important question, as was pointed out correctly. Just because it was a shasar chak last year doesn't necessarily mean it's a shasar chak this year. There were certain psakim that were actually given in this in our sugiv corona that were said explicitly, these are psakim that are given b'shasar chak, and these are not to be repeated, and they have to be reassessed next year. I remember going back Pesach time, when there were certain kulas that were given regarding many, many things concerning Pesach, where it was said very clearly by many, many Rabbanim that this kula is for this year, for Pesach Tavshin Pei, to be reassessed. Hopefully we don't have to rely on those kulas in Tavshin Pei Al Pesach. So there are many kulas that we have, and many, we spoke a lot about this earlier on in some of the Corona sugyas, back to Zman Hayom, when we first started up the Minyanim, and we still have some of these kulas in place in many shuls. There are certain Zmanim that are being daven that are not optimal in Halacha. There are certain Minyanim that are just for logistical reasons, have to start after Zman Kriya Shema, and there are people who are davening plugs and early Ma'arevs at different times. There are a lot of kulas that we're relying on. And because to some extent, again, depending each case, each community, each shul has to determine what the Shasar Chak is. So absolutely, we have to determine, does the Shasar Chak, did it exist? Does it exist right now? That's an important factor. Number two, you have to determine is the Das Yochid something that was completely and totally rejected in the world of Halacha, or is it still in a sense a viable Shita? Was it Amdu L'Minyan or not? So things that were Amdu L'Minyan B'Zman HaGemara are easy to tell. When the Gemara says Hilchos, so the game's over. But what about things that were Amdu L'Minyan later? Do we have the mechanism Amdu L'Minyan? That's also a discussion you have to figure out. When you have certain Shitas that just have not been followed for 1,000 years, is that called a Das Yochid? All of a sudden, we have a big problem. It's extenuating circumstances, so we'll dig up a shita from the Gaonim that hasn't been heard of in 1,200 years. So it could be that's not even called Das Yochid anymore. It could be that's almost like Amdu L'Minyan. That's another factor you have to determine. And then you have the third factor, is you have to figure out with the Taz Neshach, are we dealing with the Din Derais, are we dealing with Din Derabanan? According to the Shach, by Derais, the game's over. So in fact, you find in Rishonim an opinion that does actually support the Taz. I'm not saying that all the Rishonim support it, but you do find an interesting application of the Taz's idea that you could rely on the Yochid B'Makom Rabim B'Shasar Chak, even vis-a-vis Adin Deraisa. It's actually past the Yod Yoma, last week's Yod Yoma. It's related actually to Masechah Sukkah, to Sugya of Dalaminim. Those who were with us in the Tuesday night shul may well remember this. We spoke about this a few months ago. In the fourth of the Ramakomos, the Gemara in Sukkot of Laman Aleph, quotes Machlekes HaTanoim, Tana, Yavish Posel Rabbi Demachshir, Lulav Yavish, a dried out lulav. Different opinions what exactly that means, how dry is dry. But a lulav that is completely dried, halachically considered to be dried, is posel. Why is it posel? It's also a whole array of opinions in the Rishonim. It's not a hidden mitzvah, it's not hodder, it's a law macy mehaluka. Again, an array of different opinions why it's possible. The mice it's possible. But Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with all the above. Rabbi Yehuda holds that a dried out lulav is still kosher. So the fifth of the Mar Makomos, the Hagos Oshri, quotes a fascinating opinion from Rishonim. The Heicha, the Lohayelo Esrog, a person couldn't get an Esrog. Velonis Atzav mitzvahs the Pshiyaso, that it's not that he was lazy, it's not that he was negligent, he partially couldn't get an Esrog. No, we can't even fathom such a concept. We can't get an Esrog. We can't get an Esrog today. As I say, that the Esrogim that we wouldn't use for chinuch for our kids, the Vilna Gaon would have plots to get his hands on. That means that we have Baruch Hashem, we have thousands of Esrogim to choose from. Said in Europe, it was his honor. You have to go back to Europe. When I was a little boy, it wasn't that long ago, when I was a little boy, not every little kid had an Esrog, not every adult had an Esrog. I remember there were many, many people who stood around in shul by Hoshana standing in place, not because they were standing in place because of Corona. They were standing in place because they didn't have a little bit of Esrog. A lot of people didn't have a little bit of Esrog. They would cheer. People would go after davening. They'd hand each other the Esrog. They'd shake a little bit. So not everyone has it. In Eastern Europe, of course, people didn't have an Esrog. Each shul would buy an Esrog. So they'd give Matanos Lahachsa. They would go around and give it one to another. But you have a situation where a person didn't have an Esrog. Bachras Adas, it would appear to me, says the Gos Ashri, you could still shake a, make a bracha on esrog that has problems, has holes in it, or sheish b'psul acher, af b'sheino hadar, even though it's not very beautiful. Why? If it's not beautiful, isn't it possible? The bereish prechluv agoz will pligi rebuti v'rabon name the lulav baby esrog. The Tanoim have a machlok is the same way that the Tanoim are fighting it out whether lulav hayavish is possible. They would argue Rabbi Yehuda disagreed with the Chacham on many of the psul esrog. Iba inen hidur. Rabbi Yehuda machshir b'shneyan. Rabbi Yehuda permitted. Rabbi Yehuda yavshu to lo inen hadar. Rabbi Yehuda was the dissenting view, Das Yochanan, and he held that you don't necessarily need it to be so beautiful. Uchdayhu Rabbi Yehuda l'smach l'bishas adchak. So the Hagos Oshri pulls the phrase right out of Maseches Nida. Kedayhu Rabbi Yehuda l'smach l'bishas adchak. With the shas adchak, can't get another answer. Afagad ram pligyale. Even though most of the other Tanoim disagree with him, apparently the Hagos Oshri is learning this is not an umdul minyan. There was never a formal psak to outvote Rabbi Yehuda. Just as there was no formal vote to reject the view of Rabbi Eliezer back in Maseches Nida. Since Rabbi Yehuda's Shita was still a viable Shita, and this constituted an acceptable degree, acceptable level of Shas Adchak, we can apply the rule of Kedayu plug with Smech Lav Shas Adchak. Now, this psul of Lulav Hayovesh or an Esrog that's lack of Hadar, the Pashtus is a psul Diaraisa, and still the Gos Asher was willing to invoke the Das Yochid, basing himself on that Gemara Maseches Nida. So unlike the Shach, who differentiated between the Raises and the Rabbanans, the Gos Asher seems to be supporting the view of the Taz, but even by the Raises, we have a right to do so. Again, I'm not being Mechriyah, probably being Mechriyah between the Shach and the Taz, but this is definitely up for discussion, both in Rishonim and the Gedolia Poskim, that maybe we can extend this principle even to Dinim Deraisa. So again, so we didn't give any absolute real examples per se, Bizman Azel, some of the shurim that we gave, many of the shurim we gave actually last year, beginning of this particular difficult kufa, so revolved around some of the shasat chakulas that we were relying upon. I think tonight's year almost like set the tone a little bit, gave us a little bit of a background, both in terms of the shahs that are coming up Bizman Azel, still unfortunately shahs still resurfacing Bizman Azel. And in general, Pesach even out of the realm of COVID, in terms of a regular job, a regular rav, sometimes has to deal records with things that are shas adchaks. There are many, many degrees of shas adchaks. There are shas adchaks that involve sometimes hefsid mamon, significant hefsid mamon, and sometimes you have situations where it's a hefsid mamon for one person, not for another. Not everybody's loss of money is the same. So for some one person's financial situation, this may qualify as a shas adchak. For another, maybe not. There are other factors. There are situations of shas adchaks of Shalom Bayis sometimes are important facts of Shas Adchaks. But sometimes there's almost like a mistaken lingo out there called like a heta for Kirov. I'm not a particularly big fan of that phrase, heta for Kirov. It's not a heta for Kirov. Very often, Kirov situations will involve Shas Adchaks. Very often they will involve interactions with family members who are not yet from and will create a lot of significant tension. And can sometimes impact on the up-and-coming person being able to become from properly. So that's always something. Any rav who's involved in answering questions related to kirov. So it's not like just this lingo, you know, green light called the heter of kirov, but rather for the purposes of kirov. Very often, kirov situations touch on different degrees of shas adchak and require sometimes a little bit of creativity to be able to figure out whether it is appropriate to rely on Das Yochid, and again, how you do that based on some of the things we're talking about. So these are some of the things that go into the equation of our sugya. First of all, determining is it a Shas Adchak, and important, as was mentioned before, determining just because it was a Shas Adchak, is it still a Shas Adchak? That's a very, very important factor. Very often, certain clues are given, and those clues take on a life in and of themselves, and they really should be retracted when the circumstances change. So are we dealing with an authentic Shas Adchak in the here and now? Number two, are we dealing with the Shita that has been rejected entirely, either by Chazal or perhaps at a later date, that Shita has, in a sense, been become lost by the regular halachic picture? And then number three, are we limited in applying this principle only to Dinim D'Rabbanan, or do we have a right to branch out even to Dinim D'Oraisa? So again, this hopefully gave us a little bit of an understanding as to this very, very important aspect of passing Shailas under extenuating circumstances. When we do and we don't say, the parameters of soul, chen al das yach b'shas. Okay. Good night, everybody. Good night.
Rabbi?